You're listening to Unexpecting, the podcast bringing you real conversations from those of us who have suffered pregnancy and infant loss. With comfort and hope for the future, I'm your host, Ashley Bitterman. Today, I'm talking to Liana, an ER pediatrician who experienced recurring miscarriages before welcoming her beautiful rainbow baby this July. Hey, Liana, thanks so much for talking to me.
Hi, no problem.
Okay, so we're going to start with one, two, three.
Okay.
What is one thing you can't live without, two of your all-time favorite movies, and three people, celebrities, you want to have dinner with?
All right, one thing I can't live without would be chocolate comes to my mind first. I don't know why.
Good answer. Good answer.
What was it? Two of my favorite movies.
Yep.
I really love Forrest Gump. And there's such stupid movies that I'm thinking of, but Anchorman is the second one that I'm thinking of, which is such a dumb movie.
Oh, mine's like Step Brothers, so I'm with you.
We actually just watched Step Brothers, weirdly enough, last week and remembered how funny it was.
It's great. Classic.
Yeah. All right. Those are good. And then three people to have dinner with. Leonardo DiCaprio, because he was like my idol when I was like 10 years old and still is. Taylor Swift, because I love her. And I don't know, I guess like Barack Obama.
Great. I feel like Barack and Taylor are definitely on my list. Leonardo. You don't hear about him as much anymore, but yes.
Yeah, I still love him.
Titanic Leonardo. Yeah. I would have dinner with that era of.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's your earliest memory that you have of wanting to be a mom?
Oh, probably when I was like a little girl and you're like playing with your little baby dolls and stuff and you're pushing them in the stroller and playing with like the kitchen set and stuff.
Yes, we all had those. And you are married. How did you and your husband, Steve, meet?
We actually met at a wedding. I was a bridesmaid and his brother was a groomsman. So he was a wedding guest. And his mom was at the wedding. His whole family was there. And I was a bridesmaid and I was still in medical school. And I just like had not really been dating at all. And it was a friend's wedding. And I was like, you know, this might be a good chance to meet someone because mutual people. And then it like happened to work out.
Like a movie. I feel like that's so something that happens in a movie.
Yeah, it really was. It was kind of crazy. And like, I met his mom that night and I had been drinking a little bit. And when she gave me a hug, I whispered to her that I was going to marry her son, like a crazy person. And she thought that I was crazy.
Oh my gosh. What are the chances?
Yeah.
It was meant to be.
Yeah.
So how long into your marriage did you decide you're going to start trying to get pregnant, or did you decide?
So we knew right away that we were like getting married and having kids. It was just like, Steve has always wanted kids. I've always wanted kids. And we just kind of knew like, we're getting married. We'll probably be married for like a year and then we're going to have kids. So we always knew. And then, so we were married in June of 2019. And then I guess it was December of 2019 when we were like, all right, let's stop taking birth control and just like, kind of start trying for fun, but I wasn't really tracking anything or doing anything serious. And then I first got pregnant that January. So
like, wow.
Right away.
So how did you find out you were pregnant? Like, what was your reaction?
So the first month we tried, I didn't try anything. I didn't get pregnant. The second month we tried, then I did an ovulation test the second month just to be like, let me figure out my cycle. Like, yeah. Nothing crazy. Let's just find out what's going on. So then I like knew exactly when I was going to get my period. So I did one of the pregnancy tests like 2 days early and it was very, very faintly positive. And I was like, oh my God, I'm pregnant. And then I surprised him. We were going to see actually the Alanis Morissette Broadway show that night.
Yes.
And so I was like, texting like, oh, can we just get a coffee beforehand? Like meet me at the Starbucks around the corner. So then I like gave him, it was Valentine's Day actually. And I gave him a card and it had the pregnancy test in it.
Oh my God.
And I have a video of it and it's very, very cute.
What was his reaction?
shocked. He was like shocked, and then he started crying, and then he couldn't believe it. And then we were hugging. And then we went to the Alanis Morissette show, and he bought, they had like a little onesie, and it said, "You've already won me over" on it.
Gosh, I love that.
It's really, really cute.
And now that song will be stuck in my head all night, and I'm I'm fine with that. So did you, is this a pregnancy you announced to family and friends?
Yeah. So I'm like, I can't keep a secret to save my life. And so like the day I'm ovulating, everyone, all of my friends and family like knows that I'm ovulating type of a thing. Yeah. So like my mom like knew the day I was supposed to get my period. So I told my like group of best friends, which is like, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 friends. My mom knew. We told Steve's mom, his brother. We told like a bunch of people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's so exciting.
We're just excited.
And then how far along when something went wrong were you?
Yeah. So in that one, I kept taking a pregnancy test like every day of the first week because I just couldn't believe that I was pregnant. Mm-hmm. And the line like never really got darker. It always stayed like really faint. And so I was like reading a lot online and people were like, yeah, that's happened. And now I have my kid and like, it's totally normal. And then other people were like, yeah, that happened to me. And I wasn't actually pregnant. I had a miscarriage. So I was kind of like, I don't know what's going to happen. But then a week went by and I hadn't gotten my period. So I was like, I'm pregnant. Like the test just isn't getting darker, but it's not getting lighter. So I'm pregnant. And then another week went by. So I was 6 weeks. So I was like, okay, this isn't like a chemical pregnancy at this point, because I've gotten to 6 weeks. And then I work in the emergency room. So my coworker actually ultrasounded me just for fun to see if we could find something. And we couldn't find anything, but we were like, well, it's really early. And I could tell she was kind of like, ooh, and I was kind of like, ooh, but it was really early. Maybe my dates were wrong. So I didn't really think anything of it. And then a few days after, so I was like 6.5 weeks, I started bleeding. And then I had like the bleeding cramping, went to the doctor and she did an ultrasound and there was nothing there. So either I had passed it or it was some sort of weird chemical pregnancy that just never really progressed.
So how do you respond or react when you find that out after being so excited?
Yeah, it was really devastating. When I first started bleeding, I called the office and they were like, that can be normal. Well, you can come in tomorrow. If you keep bleeding, we'll do an ultrasound. And then I'm like, okay. And then I actually had worked an overnight and it was when I came home from an overnight, I was bleeding. So I had to sleep the whole day. So I slept the whole day. And then I woke up that night and went to the bathroom and it was like, I got my period is what it was like. And that moment when you sit on the toilet and see it and you're just like, I think I actually made a noise where I was like, oh, like you just really caught off guard. So then I called the office again and they were like, you can either go to the emergency room or just kind of stay at home. And if you're not like hemorrhaging, you really don't need to go to the emergency room. And I did not want to be in that state in the emergency room. I would have much rather have been home and just deal with it. So we stayed home. And then as the night went on, you know, the bleeding got heavier, the cramping got worse. And it was just, I kind of felt like I knew what was happening, but we were trying to be hopeful. And then at the doctor the next day, when she said there was nothing, it was almost, I don't know, it just felt empty, I guess would be the word.
You're a pediatrician.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, you know, I feel like other people would have been rushing to the emergency room and you were able to just be home and deal with it on your own.
Yeah.
Do you feel like being a pediatrician really helps you in that case?
Yeah, I think in that situation, if I didn't like have the medical knowledge of what could have potentially been happening, I probably would have gone to the ER. And in the emergency room, I'm a pediatrician in the ER. And so I see up to age 25. And so I see tons of people, unfortunately, who come in who are bleeding in pregnancy. And we're trying to figure out if it's a miscarriage or not. So I'm used to dealing with that type of patient. So I kind of knew what would happen if I went in. And as a doctor, normally what I do is I, you know, get a blood level, I do an ultrasound and I tell them we're going to have to wait and see a lot of the time and I send them home. So I kind of was like, if I go in, that's what they're going to say is we'll have to wait and see. And if they do an ultrasound and nothing's there, they're going to say, well, go to your OB and confirm it. So I just was like, I'll just go in tomorrow and have the official ultrasound.
What was it like telling your family about that loss?
I guess it was, I mean, sad is like the first word that I think of. Everyone was just really sad. You're so excited. I mean, at that point it was early, which was nice, but you still are kind of planning out when the due date's going to be and how pregnant you're going to be at each event over the next 9 months.
Yeah.
So it was like more a loss of like what could have been, but then also very comforting because being medical, I know that it's so common to have a miscarriage so early. And so everyone was kind of like, it's so common. You got pregnant so fast. It was the first time. So like sad, but hopeful, I guess.
And then how long after that first miscarriage did you feel strong enough and ready to try again?
I mean, right away we were like, let's go again. Like that one didn't work out, but whenever my cycle comes back, we're going to try again. So then I think, trying to think, then COVID hit actually, because that was February and then it was March 2020. So then we waited, I can't really remember, 2 or 3 months, I think we waited and then started trying again. And then I think it might have taken 2 cycles. So funny how you forget these things.
So what was it like to find out you're pregnant for the second time?
So the second time I would say was equally as exciting, but you're more cautious because you don't know. So I think we had more conversations about, should we tell, should we wait, what should we do? I kind of felt like we should still tell because everyone's going to find out. If it doesn't work out anyway, I'm going to tell them all. So why not share my excitement when I'm excited? And then if the loss happens, you kind of went along, you know, with everyone on the journey. So they're there for you the whole time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So we still told the same people. The only person we didn't really want to tell was Steve's grandpa. So that one we were a little more delicate with.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what was the second pregnancy like for you?
So the second pregnancy progressed. I went in, I guess it was at 8 weeks and there was a heartbeat and I got the little ultrasound picture. So then I felt very reassured that like, okay, I'm definitely pregnant. And then I had ultrasounded myself at work and saw the baby at 10 weeks and there was a heartbeat and the baby looked fine. One of my coworkers ultrasounded with me. I was so nervous. So I was always, any chance I get, I wanted to do a self ultrasound, which like anyone listening, you're really not supposed to do. And I shouldn't have done that, but I did.
I feel like, how do you, so tempting. I would be there every single day doing the same
thing. Like the ultrasound machine's like 10 minutes for me. And I'm like, I could just very quickly do this, but you're not supposed to. So I did withhold a lot. And then once in a while, I would get one of the other doctors and be like, can you come with me? We could just take a peek. So that one was like really exciting. And then I made it to 11 and a half weeks at that one when we found out that there was no heartbeat anymore.
So what happened?
So it was a crazy story. I actually had a hip injury from running. I had gone for a run in like April, just normal. And my hip had been hurting me since then. And I was kind of going to orthopedist, getting an MRI. And then I woke up one morning and my hip was completely locked. Like my muscles were in a complete spasm and I physically couldn't move my hip. And I couldn't get up out of bed. Oh. And we had to call 911. And I went to the hospital in an ambulance because I physically couldn't move or walk or anything. And so we get to the hospital and I tell them, you know, I'm 11 and a half weeks pregnant and I have this hip injury and I can't move my hip. And so the doctor said, well, let's just do a quick like bedside ultrasound just to take a quick look. Oh, also, I forgot a few days prior in the ER, I had ultrasounded myself and I couldn't find a heartbeat myself. And I had two coworkers come and try to find one and we couldn't find one, but it was so early. We were all like, it happens sometimes. You can't always find one that early if he's in a weird position. And like, it wasn't transvaginal. It was transabdominal at that time. Mm-hmm. So we were like, I'm sure everything's fine. You'll go to your doctor. And like, I just tried to not think about that. I was like, yeah, once I get a transvaginal, we'll find a heartbeat. So I was a little anxious about that when we went to the hospital and they were going to do the ultrasound.
I'm sure.
And then they did a transabdominal and they told me there was a heartbeat. The doctor who did it said there was a heartbeat. And then she was like, couldn't really tell me what the rate was. So she was like, we'll send you for an official. We'll do a transvaginal while you're here. We'll send you for an official ultrasound. And then they were doing like an MRI and stuff for my hip. I couldn't get any pain medicine for my hip because I was pregnant. So they didn't want to get
me
any pain
med.
So it was like a really crazy thing. Then it took 5 hours to get the ultrasound. So I'm kind of just sitting there waiting for like my ultrasound, my MRI. It was COVID. So Steve could only be with me for like I think it was 2 hours, then he had to leave, so then I was alone waiting.
And you're still in excruciating pain?
I'm in pain only when I move. My hip is completely frozen. I can't move. And I'm like peeing in a bedpan. But I'm calm because I think the baby's fine. So I'm kind of like, whatever, it's fine. So then they sent me for ultrasound finally, and Steve was not there anymore. He was going back home because they kicked him out because of COVID. And when I went for the ultrasound, I couldn't get the transvaginal because of my hip. I couldn't move into the right position.
Wow.
So she did transabdominal, and I couldn't see the screen, but I could see her face, and I could just tell that like she wasn't finding the heartbeat because she was, you know, looking and looking, and she wasn't. Normally they find it right away. They turn the screen and yeah, they point and you're, it's fine. And so I could tell she was looking, and then I said to her, can you see a heartbeat? And she was like, I can't find one right now. And I was like, let's just do the transvaginal. I don't care how much it hurts. And so it was in so much pain. They like propped up my pelvis, did the transvaginal. And then she was looking and I was saying, do you see a heartbeat? Do you see a heartbeat? And I was like really kind of frantic. And she was like, I can't tell you. We have to wait for the radiologist to read it. And I was like, just tell me. And then finally she said, there's no movement. And then she showed me the screen so I could see. And that was just like the worst moment. And then I called Steve, I think I was in a panic, and I just screamed that there was like no heartbeat and I was sobbing.
Oh my goodness.
That was the worst. And then they brought me back to my room. And since I work in that hospital system, one of the nurses came to like see me to say hi. And I thought she knew what had happened, and that's why she was coming to see me. So I was like crying to her, but she thought I was crying because my hip hurt.
Oh my God.
So she was like, oh man, you must be in a lot of pain, like kind of casual. And then I was like, there's no heartbeat. And she was like, you're pregnant? And I was like, I guess I'm not pregnant. Oh, like God. It was just so terrible. And then they sent me for the MRI after that without a doctor coming to see me or anything. They let Steve in for like 5 minutes. So I saw him, and then I went for the MRI. And for the MRI, you have to be completely still. And it was of my hip and my spine they did. So it was an hour long MRI where you have to lay there totally still. And I'm like sobbing.
Oh my God.
And that was just horrible doing that whole thing. And then the whole thing was really traumatizing. They brought me back to my room. The doctor came in and said to me, you know, it was just a moment in time. So we don't know for sure if there's no heartbeat. So we're still going to treat you as if you could be pregnant. And then we'll repeat an ultrasound in the morning, which medically is completely not true. If there's no heartbeat, there's no heartbeat. There's never like a moment in time where a fetus doesn't have a heartbeat. And then like, it comes back and they're fine. Like that just doesn't happen. But I was so desperate that I was like, okay, maybe like the baby's fine. And I even said to Steve, like, they said it was just a moment in time. I forgot exactly what I said to him, but I felt like this weird sense of hope, even though my like logical brain knew there wasn't any. Emotionally, I thought maybe there's a chance. So they didn't give me any pain meds. I got admitted to the hospital. And then in the morning, they made me repeat the ultrasound just to confirm that their baby had no heartbeat. And at that point, I kind of came to and was like, why the F are they making me do this ultrasound again? And my OB had called me and said, why are they making you do this ultrasound again? Like, there's no question. The fetus is measuring at 10 weeks. You're supposed to be almost 12 weeks. There was no heartbeat. Like she said to me flat out, the baby is not viable. Like this is a miscarriage. And then I couldn't get in touch with the doctors in time. So they still sent me and I had to get the ultrasound again. And then I had to get a CT scan and it was a whole thing.
So you basically just had to experience the nightmare twice.
Yeah. Yeah. And then since I had the hip injury, I couldn't get the DNC because they couldn't put me in the right position. And it was a holiday weekend. It was July 4th in the hospital. So I had to wait a full week. So that was on Wednesday, July 1st, I found out, and I got my DNC 7 days later.
Oh my gosh. So what is going through your mind in those 7 days where you know that there is a non-viable fetus still inside of you?
Yeah, it was horrible. I think I cried all the time. And it was weird because I've had so many patients like this where it's called a missed miscarriage where you miscarried, but you didn't actually lose the baby and you find it on ultrasound. So it's called a missed miscarriage. And I've had so many patients and I remember always thinking like, it must feel so horrible to have that baby in you. And I would just feel like, oh my God, I just want it out, like take it out. But I actually felt the opposite where like, I didn't want it taken out. Like, obviously I knew it had to come out, but it just felt kind of nice to just have it in me for a few more days, as weird as that sounds.
Yeah.
So it was weird. Like I was obviously pissed I had to wait a whole week. I would have preferred it be like 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like this horrible, like, oh my God, I have to get this thing out. But it was a little comforting that like I still had it for a day. I don't know. It was like my baby was in there.
Did they give you any type of diagnosis or reason?
Yes. Yeah, so then I got the DMC and my doctor was like very confident it was going to be something genetic. She was like, the most common reason that missed miscarriages happen are for genetic reasons. So she was like really confident we were going to get a reason. And it took about a month and I got the karyotype back and the baby had 3 sets of chromosomes. And you're only supposed to have 2 sets of chromosomes. So it's called triploidy is the name of the condition. And if you look it up, it's completely not compatible with life. And most of people who have it miscarry in the first trimester. Some have a stillborn in the second trimester, rarely in the third. Some people deliver full term if they didn't get any genetic testing and if it wasn't picked up on screening. And the baby will live normally days to weeks, and very rarely, I think the longest living baby was like 8 months that ever lived with it, but had a very, you know, disabled life with lots and lots of support. So to me, that was like the most comforting thing I could have heard, was that like the way that I lost the baby was actually the best way that I could have lost that baby, instead of carrying further or being in the situation like you and others have been in, where you have to do an elective abortion at like 20 weeks and you get the genetic testing back.
Yeah.
Which I would have done, you know, if I had kept carrying and gotten the result of triploidy, I definitely would have done an elective abortion at that point, because it would have been, it's just too much to carry that kind of a baby.
Yeah.
For me, for other people, you know,
they're totally. And I can imagine that being so, it's almost like a relief.
Yeah. I was like, best thing for that baby that could have happened was to miscarry.
Yeah. So what then, now you've gone through 2 miscarriages, do you feel the same readiness that you felt after the first one to try again?
I weirdly enough still did, because I felt like the first one was just 6 weeks. And like that happens so frequently, like a chemical pregnancy or a really early miscarriage before the 12-week point. Like I never had a heartbeat on that one. So to me, that one, as traumatizing as it was in the moment to be miscarrying, like I sobbed like crazy. I was so upset. Like it was really traumatic to go through. But then once I was out of it, looking back, it was like, well, you know, that's kind of a part of getting pregnant, is having a miscarriage. It's so common. That I almost felt like, okay, I recovered from that. This one was traumatic and my body had to recover more from it, because I had to get a cycle back because my HCG was, you know, in the 100,000s where it was supposed to be. But I was like very eager to get my cycle back, and to like the second I got it back, I wanted to be pregnant again right away.
And Leanna, you recently welcomed your beautiful rainbow baby into the world.
After the second miscarriage, it took me 3 months to get my cycle back, 2 or 3 months, I think. And then on the third cycle, we got pregnant, and then that's my baby.
Well, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
You, in your story, you are the hope for so many women out there, myself included, to see that that's possible. So What was that like? What was it like to find out you're pregnant for the third time, and how do you stay optimistic after having two losses?
So I would say like every time I found out I was pregnant, I have been equally as excited. So like that time, I mean, maybe even more excited, because it was like, this one had taken a few cycles and we had to wait a while to try again. So this one I was like, yes, it happened. Cause you're so worried that like, you're going to be trying forever and ever. And then of course the worry, I hope it's normal, and like the anxiety. I did genetic testing on this one just to get like reassured that everything would be fine. So, and then every milestone, it just feels better and better. Like we hit the 12 weeks. That was amazing. I did the genetic testing. That was amazing. I got the newborn, the 20 week anatomy scan. So like every step, it's just more and more exciting. And we still told everyone. I waited a little bit longer to do like my social media announcement, but I still did it, because again, I feel like at this point, if I'm going to have like a third miscarriage, everyone's going to know it, because you're going to see that I'm pregnant. And like, I don't want to hide it. I want to share my joy and excitement.
Yeah, absolutely. And what was your pregnancy like?
I mean, I didn't have morning sickness, but my hip issue that I had, unfortunately, I still have. So it was a little painful in terms of like ligament pain and hip pain. But other than that, it was pretty uneventful. It went as planned.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I feel like that's best case scenario.
Yeah.
Many.
I had bleeding at 15 weeks. I bled a little bit, but it was like dark blood. So the doctor was like, it's actually probably implantation bleeding that just came out later. And so I was very anxious because I spotted for like a week that week, but it was always dark. But it's like every time you go to the bathroom, you're just so scared to look at your underwear. Actually, the whole pregnancy, every time I went to the bathroom until 20 weeks, I was always scared to look at my underwear because you're just so scared you're going to see blood. But then once I hit 20 weeks, that kind of went away.
Wow. I'm sure. I feel like after experiencing that, that's like you're used to seeing blood.
And yeah. I mean, you have this feeling. I remember feeling like I can't even imagine getting pregnant and then staying pregnant. Like it just seemed like such a crazy thing to happen.
Yeah. And yet most people, that's what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. I also had friends get pregnant during this time and share their ultrasound pictures and always happy to see them and excited, but like definitely traumatic anytime seeing an ultrasound, because that was how I learned that I had miscarried, was looking at that ultrasound. So anytime I saw one, it like brought back a flash of seeing my ultrasound.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. Hard. So many women are waiting for the moment when their rainbow baby is placed on their chest for the first time. Can you describe that moment?
Very overwhelming. We were all crying. My mom was there. I think I said, oh my God, like 100 times. A very overwhelming moment, I would say.
Oh, it must be so beautiful, but also so strange that all of a sudden there's just this little tiny human that you made and now you're a mom.
Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, I feel like every single day with him, I look at him and I'm like, I can't believe I have this baby. I can't believe it happened and he's here.
What's been the best part about being Lucas's mommy?
Just like holding him and I don't know, having this little baby to love and spend time with. And I'm nursing him and I really, really love nursing him. It's very challenging because you're the only one who can feed the baby and like going anywhere is hard and there's all the stuff that comes with it. But I just love that like connection of having my baby. After my second miscarriage, I had a lot of breastfeeding dreams, which were really weird. Wow. And I actually have a friend who had a miscarriage who told me she had a breastfeeding dream. And I explained mine to her and it was exactly the same as hers, where you're sitting and you're looking down at a baby and they're nursing and you can like see milk coming. And I had that dream like 2 or 3 times and she had that exact dream.
Oh my gosh, it's so weird.
It was really weird. So now I feel like when I'm nursing, I remember how like I was having dreams about that. And now like, I can't believe that I'm doing it.
Oh, that's so cool. What do you say to other women and other families who have experienced loss or recurring loss like yourself to give them that hope for the future?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one because I feel like so many different people are comforted by different things. So like, for me, I was very comforted knowing that it was like a chromosomal thing and knowing that 1 in 4 are miscarriages and knowing how, like those kind of stats comfort me, where for other people, like that's less comforting and that makes them feel more stressed and unhappy. But I guess just saying that like it is common and so many people have experienced it. And unfortunately, it seems to be like a part of having a baby is miscarriage. I'm sure you just realize once you share your story, you hear about all of these women who have the same story that you didn't even know had that story. So, you know, we're all in it. And so many people go on to have healthy babies. It's so much more common to go on to have a healthy baby than to not. So I think that there's just tons and tons of hope.
Yeah, that's really nice reminder that most people do go on to have healthy babies.
Yeah. It's very rare, very, very rare to not, I think. Mm. And medically it's just, there's just so much science that we can do to get you a baby.
Yeah, exactly. That's personally comforting as I pick myself up and try again and try to get to the place that you are at now. And I'm so excited for you and I'm so happy for you. And also thank you so much for being so open and sharing your story, because like you're saying, it's part of pregnancy. And yeah. I feel like that's not how people look at it. It's yeah. not so normalized, even though it's so normal.
Yeah.
And you being open to sharing your story will be helpful to other people who have gone through something similar. And you're also that beacon of light and hope that we all can go on to have healthy, beautiful, happy babies.
Yeah. And also I just want to say everyone deals with it differently. Like the fact that I was able to go through them so quickly and then be ready to like get up and try right away, that's not the norm. And I don't think people have to be expected to do that every time, you know, like take your time to grieve and no loss is less of a loss than any other. Like when I was 6 weeks, I almost felt like I don't have the right to grieve this one. Like I was barely pregnant. Like other women are having miscarriages so much later and stillborns and like, who am I to grieve? But like, you have every right to grieve. You were pregnant. You thought you were carrying a child. It's a loss.
Exactly. It's still a loss. You still had that same moment of excitement. So yeah. The loss is still just as devastating.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know.
Thank you so much. And I wish you all the health and happiness to you, your husband, Steve, and baby Lucas.
Thank you. And thanks for making this podcast. It's so great. What a great way to channel your energy. I love it.
Thank you. So supportive.
Yeah.
Talk to you soon. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Unexpecting. Join our community by following us on Instagram at Unexpecting Podcast. If you'd like to share your story on our show, email us at unexpectingpodcast@gmail.com. You can support this podcast by visiting anchor.fm/unexpecting. Be kind to yourself, be patient, and remember, today's teardrops are tomorrow's rainbows. Take care.